right, so today I'm going to talk a little bit about an investigation that we did in 2016. I'll preface this by saying I have given this talk at other places, and I realize that not all states are required to investigate every single case of influenza, but Kentucky statute requires that we investigate and do a case report on every single individual case of influenza. So this can become problematic, as you can imagine, during a really rough flu season. So just to give some background, this is where I'm located at in Kentucky. I'm a local regional epidemiologist. I've been in my position in my area for 14 years. We have a population of roughly 135,000 people. We border Ohio and West Virginia. We have three medical centers that service our community. And for those of you that are familiar with Kentucky, we're about 3 hours from the Kentucky Derby. So EpiRapid response teams, they were started in Kentucky in the late 1980s to enhance epi capacity at local health departments. If some of you can remember back to the Stone Ages when you had to get reports that physicians called into you or they faxed into you by paper, you can imagine that when those arrived at a local health department, you had a nurse who had a million other responsibilities who maybe got to that and reported that as quick as she could. Environmentalists took environmental complaints, but there wasn't a lot of cohesiveness about how to spot outbreaks and how to investigate those. And so this program was started to give them some education on how they could do that. The regional epidemiology positions were created in 2003. And after that, there was some discussion that maybe we should get rid of these programs. But as has happened to me over my career, you know, you have one county that has an outbreak of this going, and then all of a sudden this other county gets an outbreak, and I can't be in two places at once. And so the programs have continued. There's currently about 400 members in Kentucky of all sorts of different positions at the health department. In my region, I have two health department directors that have completed the training, eight nurses. This ranges from WIC nurses and nursing administrators to reportable disease nurses, and then seven registered sanitarians. The training is a two-day face-to-face training, so we go through the 10 steps of an outbreak investigation. A lot of these individuals have been in public health for a long time, but they've never had any kind of epidemiology training. We talk about disease-specific investigations, so enteric investigations, tuberculosis investigations, hepatitis investigations, and then we talk about lab sample collection, clinical and environmental-type samples that you might take. Then we run them through a practical tabletop exercise. And as you can see, a lot of times this gets funded by the topic of the day. So we've had Ebola tabletop exercises, pandemic flu, Zika, any kind of way we can get it funded, the training, we're going to use that avenue. But this is really to give the people that have just finished the training some practical hands-on lessons. And then every 3 years you have to do this as a refresher because unlike my area where we seem to have an outbreak every single year, some areas don't have that, and so this gives them a chance to practice. They also have to do 4 hours of CEU training. We try to tie this into, the hepatitis conferences or the TB conferences that they're required to attend, or retail food that registered sanitarians are required to attend. And then they have to attend the conference, which we just had last week, which gives epidemiologists like me and my friends in the back a chance to talk about all the cool investigations that we do. So in my area, it's also important to note Kentucky has 120 counties. And so there's two different structures of health departments. You have single local independent health departments that are just county-based, and then you have regions, which can be 2 to 10 counties. In my area, at the time of this investigation, I had 3 independent small health departments and then a 2-county region health department. Most of the time, the outbreaks are foodborne. They're your norovirus outbreaks at a nursing home that last for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and they're really minor. And we don't typically cross jurisdictions. So if you remember, in 2012, we had a pretty big multi-state cantaloupe and salmonella outbreak investigation. And so one of my counties had some of the first cases of that, and then another county got cases. Well, I didn't call Boyd County, where I'm housed, and say, can you all go over to Carter County and help them do this investigation? They just kind of sucked it up and handled it. So typically, probably like most of you, we did some rapid test kind of influenza surveillance to build cases. And in 2014, one of our hospitals in my region, the biggest hospital, got a BioFire machine, and they were going to test inpatient patients. They were going to mostly test pediatric. And like I said, we have to follow up on every single one of those cases. And so, but it was not a big deal at that time because they weren't seeing that many people. In 2015, they acquired single pathogen influenza PCR machines for every facility that they own. For time's sake, I didn't throw the map up there, but of those counties that you saw, there's at least three of those facilities in every county on that little box I had circled. They were testing everyone for the flu. If you walked in with a sniffle, they swabbed your nose for the flu. And so when we started looking at the data for this, we were overwhelmed quickly. I know one day I got into our electronic reportable disease system and had 250 cases, which is phenomenal for me. I usually have about 50 in there. So we were overwhelmed very quickly. So we decided that we would use our EpiRapid response teams and that we would use them to help do different tasks with this investigation. If we had let each single individual reportable disease nurse for each health department do that, they'd probably still be calling flu cases. That's how overwhelmed we were. So we asked them about vaccination status, Tamiflu usage, signs and symptoms. We also asked them where they went to school, work, and daycare. And actually, through this, we were able to identify two daycare outbreaks and two long-term care outbreaks that were not reported to us that we figured out from these interviews. We asked about school attendance. We called pharmacies about Tamiflu supplies. So I had registered sanitarians that were calling schools to get attendance information, that were calling pharmacies to get school attendance. I had directors and nursing administrators who never did case interviews that were calling cases for to find out their vaccination status and their Tamiflu usage. Every year I do a pre-crafted talking point sheet. I'm also the public information officer for my region. And so I do just like five or six basic questions that people may ask about flu. So we had environmentalists that were answering the phones and saying, oh, yeah, you just need to go get a flu shot. It's not a bad flu season. And then lineless data. So in a perfect world, we have a system that you can query and you can pull up all these pretty data reports. Well, it crashed in the middle of this. So we went back to pen and paper, Excel spreadsheet type epidemiology. Because we could not pull that. So every health department used their team differently, but we all worked together. We also had a shared PIO for the entire region, which was the first time that had ever happened. So we had 1,500 cases of influenza that we called, and about 60% of those cases got interviewed. After hearing a few of the other presentations this week, I'm even more impressed with that number that we were able to get. It's a pretty phenomenal number. Not surprising, 75% of those cases were unvaccinated. 82% almost were pediatric cases. And we were actually following the trend that CDC started reporting on about the flu mist not being effective. We were seeing that. We would call parents and they'd go, well, we went and got that stuff squirted up their nose and it didn't work. And, we were seeing that trend and we were telling our state influenza coordinator, you know, we think there's something wrong here because we're seeing a lot of these cases. We also heard every excuse in the book, too, about why their kids weren't vaccinated. We only had one death, though, that was reported. It was in April, which was kind of odd for us, but we had 33 hospitalizations. You can see 96% reported fever, and the range is 99 to 105. We had an elderly patient that we could not convince that it was probably 100.5, not 105, and so we left that in there. But for the most part, it was around 101, you can see is the average. So you can't be at CSTE without an epi curve. So this is our pretty epi curve. I've been an epi for 14 years, and this was the first huge amount of data, so I was so excited to make all sorts of epi curves and do fun things. But you can see we had a peak around Valentine's Day, and then we had a secondary peak around my birthday in April, around the middle of April. So that matches perfectly, and that doesn't happen very often either, that your B and your A strains match perfectly to what you were seeing on your epi curve. So we saw that peak of A, that was mostly in adult cases. We saw the peak of B, which was mostly in pediatric cases. And also, if you overlay our school closures, we had a school closure there around the peak of A and a school closure around the peak of B. So we actually kind of saw some really neat things that happened. We spent approximately 1,500 hours on our response at a cost of about $45,000. I think had we not used our EpiRapid response team like we did, this amount of money would have went up because of overtime and the amount of hours spent. We had one nurse that she wanted to call every single patient. She wanted to get every single patient of hers done. And so I think that we were able to kind of get that done and to get a lot of those cases interviewed. So in conclusion, using these EpiRapid response teams can help. It's something that now is in my plans. We have disease outbreak plans, and it's actually still, it's been put in my plan now to try to work and coordinate regionally. Obviously, communities need more flu information. We've used actually the information we gleaned from this investigation for materials that we put out this year. And then I've heard some other presentations about non-culture-based technologies that are becoming easier and they're cheaper and everyone likes bells and whistles and fun, flashy things. And so I think that as epidemiologists, we have to look at what that's going to do to our numbers and then how we can respond to that because, you know, it's not going to be unusual for us to have this happen again with other diseases such as enterics when we start to move to those, you know, non-culture-based technologies.